In this episode, I'm joined by Natasha Wilson, who is the founder and director of Cambridge Insights. And this is described as a leadership and innovation organization for a greater world. And I love that phrase, for a greater world, because this isn't just about being commercial. This isn't just about making money, doing the right thing. This is actually the bigger picture. And that is actually what we're going to be here to talk about today, because whilst I've called this researching sustainability, that is just one element of, I think, what we're going to be touching on in this conversation. And prior to this, Natasha and I were kind of exploring what we might talk about. And Natasha came up with this amazing title, which was too long to call the episode, but I'm going to use it as the catchphrase, which is, and let me just tell you this, the role of research and innovation in shaping our future. The role of research and innovation in shaping our future. And I need to learn from this. I want to understand what Natasha has to share with us. So I'm really looking forward to this conversation. We don't, in true Neil Wilkins podcast style, we don't know where we're going to go with this. This is not scripted. There are no pre-planned questions. We've had a bit of a conversation about this, but we're going to see where this whole thing takes us. So, Natasha, I want to hand the microphone for a moment over to you. Give us a little bit of background in terms of your backstory, kind of what has brought you into this whole field of leadership and innovation, and kind of, I guess, really was sort of, you know, why the whole kind of research and innovation in shaping our future.
Sure, sure. Thank you, Neil, for inviting me to your wonderful podcast. So first, we know each other through marketing. So that was a good thing, isn't it? It's like many years ago, I won't say how many years ago, but we were connected through the Cambridge Marketing College. And my first love is, you know, social science, economics, strategic marketing in commercial organizations. And as you may notice, I moved from France, worked in the UK, but I worked for international organizations and absolutely loved it. And at one point, Neil, I was thinking, this is great, but I need to know what else is out there. I need to know and have a sense more of purpose, I suppose, rather than just thinking about, you know, working for startup and SMEs and with corporate clients, thinking really mainly about income and profit. And I wanted to know how we could measure impact differently. So my background has been a bit odd in terms of, like, I don't think I planned it. It was just opportunities that arise along the way. And I had a chance to work for the University of Cambridge for over best part of 10 years. And I learned a lot more about, you know, the role of leadership and the role of leaders having visions and trying to, you know, set up a purpose, a broader purpose on what was the role of organization, what was the role of creativity, of innovation, in helping us to change and to adapt to specific challenges we were faced with. So it became a little bit more of a connection between actually what it is that we do every day and how we fit in the wider, bigger world. And working with big universities, you tend to be surrounded by professors, by researchers, by people who are learning new skills, leadership skills, management skills, and broader skills, but also a lot of knowledge and wisdom that hopefully you'll see will benefit society at large. So that's how it started. So after this amazing experience, I decided to set up on my own, and that's what I do. So I offer development programs in research and innovation environments primarily, to what I call leaders in the making. And I think, Neil, we are all leaders in the making, because we're all living in this 21st century, faced with challenges that nobody's ever actually faced before. And I think we're kind of like trying to make it work as we go. and maybe this kind of like craft idea is exciting. But in view of our conversations, I felt like, you know, there's a sense of purpose and vision that we need to create, hence this fancy title I liked.
And I love the fact this whole kind of emphasis is on leaders in the making. I think there's an assumption, and I guess I kind of see this in my travels and conversations, that somebody out there kind of knows all the answers, or that, you know, this organization over here is kind of better than this organization because they've figured it out. Do you find that that is absolutely not the case? Because I guess all of us are on this kind of journey, because in lots of ways, nobody really, I mean, if you sort of add up our combined years of experience, and, you know, that's quite a lot of years, isn't it? And nobody on this journey has kind of been here before. And so we're on this journey. We're kind of leaders and marketers in the making, even though we might have decades of experience. We're all kind of coming at this with almost a blank sheet of paper to kind of try and create something and try and figure out in smart ways how to do this thing. You know, people are banding around this word sustainability all the time now, and it's becoming, you know, ever more significant, like you say, for leadership and for people in organizations to try and figure it out. But nobody yet has the answer, because nobody's actually been here before. This is a big challenge, isn't it? It really is.
Absolutely, Neil. And I think that idea or theory around, you know, the fact that the leader knows it all maybe sat well for a bit when you had a context, environments that were quite stable over many years, but definitely not in the world in which we live in, because we refer to this world as a VUCA world, you know, volatile, uncertain, complex, ambiguous world, where we have so many factors, both internal and external, that are impacting us, such as, you know, a pandemic, but we have difficult situation with Ukraine and war. And we have a lot of other things that are going on, which are impacting how we operate in our organizations. So I completely agree with you. I think this idea of like, A, that knowledge has to sit with only one person is obsolete. And secondly, that knowledge is acquired and you never need to learn anymore is also obsolete. So this kind of lifelong learning is really quite critical. And I think the idea as well of sharing the learning, sharing the wisdom. And as you know, when you come into more senior roles or acting as a leader, potentially a change agent, there is also, it's very important to know that actually you won't have all the answers, that you'll need other brains, other teams to kind of like share their insights as well, so you can come up with the best decision. And I really like what you said about this idea of sustainability. And I think the word sustainability is probably very dry, and I'm trying to translate it. And for me, that was the idea of vision for the future, you know, and a future which actually will be a legacy for future generations as well. So not a short-term future of thinking if it fits for us in this next 30, 40 years, we're happy. It's actually, can we make it sustainable for future generations as well? And also fairer, you know, for a broader part of the population. And it's interesting, Neil, because when we talk about, you know, sustainable futures, you know, it's as I said, sometimes it feels a little bit closed and that, you know, we are narrowing. But I think it's the opposite. We are creating possible futures, you know, exciting futures. And my question at the moment, and that's what I'm trying to find out, so I call myself a leadership explorer, because I'm exploring on actually where does this come from, why does that impetus to create this vision for better futures is coming from. So is it coming from one person, a leader in inverted comma? Is it in, you know, coming from research and innovation as a broader, you know, area? You know, where is it coming from? And I think that's kind of interesting conversation here that, you know, we need to have.
So let's do a little bit of a deeper dive onto this word future then, because I think for a lot of people, if they are, and you were talking about sort of pandemic and being busy in business, et cetera, et cetera, the day-to-day often consumes us, doesn't it? And I think the number of times that I hear the word busy in conversations I have with business leaders, with apprentices, with, you know, people at all different kind of levels in the organization, the word busy seems to be the most popular word, I think, in business. It really does. And I think this is public sector and private sector and, you know, large, medium and small kind of businesses. Everybody is so, say, busy. So with that word busy being kind of thrown around, you know, almost, you know, on a daily basis, How much time do you think there is for the future? Because is that almost like a barrier to almost being able to focus and almost talking ourselves out of worrying about the future? Because, well, I can't think about the future. I've got to focus on today because I'm so busy. So therefore, I don't have the time or the energy or the space to think about the future. So I'll just kind of leave that because, well, the future's tomorrow. So I don't need to worry about that right now. Do you think that is a bit of a barrier right now? Because, you know, are you seeing this problem, if you like, of busy as a, you know, almost an inhibitor to kind of almost focusing on the future?
I think you've got a really valid point, Neil. I think from an individual perspective, you know, in our role, day-to-day roles, I think there's an element of fear as well and unpredictability. So it's difficult to plan when you know that things are going to change so much. So there's an element of that we have to probably work on this. I call it personal mastery, which I think it sounds very grand, but it's about discipline and understanding maybe the emotions and the barriers that are stopping us, you know, or impacting our ability to be more creative, more visionary, more about thinking of, you know, possibilities and creating something different. I think with change comes often uncertainty and a little bit of anxiety. And we all, you know, from a human perspective, have to be faced with that and work around those emotions. So there's a bit of work done, you know, needed to be done at the individual level, I think. I think if you think about organizations, it's really interesting because, do you remember, Neil, we used to think about strategy. So vision often is linked also to strategy, you know, to think about strategic plans. And I remember when I started my career, we talked about 10-year plans. It was like 10-year, 15-year plans. Now, I don't know what your experience, Neil, when you talk to business owners, people who are in senior leadership teams, we're talking about a strategic plan may look like 1 year, potentially even 6 months, because there are so many factors that are influencing, you know, how we work and what we do in our businesses and in the world in which we operate. So I think that future, the ideal future might be different to what it was before. We're not talking about 50 years, potentially. We may be talking about 5 years and even less than that. So our perspective is different. But I think that in terms of whether we should spend more time on vision, I think yes. And I think that the two go together with the art of reflection. So it is very difficult to just create a vision just like that. So there's an element of actually reaching out to others and listening to others and sensing what is going on, both in our markets, in our teams, and in ourselves. And then when we have mastered this art, we can then spend some time reflecting. And I would say, ideally, the art of reflection should be done even for a few minutes at the end of each day. But ideally on a weekly basis. And I think if we mix or join together the art of reflection of what has gone on and what have I learned and what are the things that I need to take into consideration, then we can start to link that to vision and thinking more about what can we create differently. And it's both in terms of how we work, you know, like I'm thinking about some very practical ways here is that nobody thought that we would work online so much. And then the pandemic forced us to do that. So it's about the future of work, the future of a clean energy, the future of food. It's all these elements of actually areas that impact us both individually, but also in our organizations if we link to this particular market. So yes, I would say reflection and vision should go together. They should combine and it might make it a little bit easier. And it should be a practice that we do probably individually on a weekly basis, but I think that from organizations' perspective, there needs to be some time dedicated to it also on the monthly basis to contribute to it.
Yeah, and I love that word reflection. I think, you know, from a personal perspective, there is nothing more valuable than a moment of reflection. And it can be moments, can't it? We're not necessarily talking you have to take a half day out to be able to do this. You can do it in the moment. And I think, you know, I've talked a lot about being present, being mindful. I know this word mindfulness is, you know, everywhere. And it's just, you know, it's almost a commodity word now. But I still think it is so, so important, absolutely vital to just really understand how how are we doing? Where are we going? What is happening? Because otherwise we're just chasing. So that moment of reflection, I couldn't agree more. I think it's just a wonderful thing. And it just feels good as well. It is a good thing just to take that sense of moment and just say, okay, how am I doing? Where am I? What is going on? Okay, and what can I learn from it? And I think that's the key to me to kind of, you know, professional reflection is, what am I learning? What am I going to do differently the next time so that we can constantly be moving the game forward? It was really interesting a little bit early when you used the word purpose and then you moved very, very quickly on from that. Do you feel that organizations or leaders who have purpose at the core of their decision making will retain a more strategic and maybe a longer term future focused view? Because it feels that if purpose is there, this kind of bigger, kind of more far reaching, more kind of intrinsic value that you bring to the planet, to your society or your community, it just feels that that's bigger and greater than any kind of short term little kind of tactical commercial gain that you can have. If you're working to a purpose, just by the definition of purpose, does that not mean that we are more strategic and that maybe we can look to those 3 to 5 year kind of visions, if you like, because we're working to something bigger and greater than just the everyday? Is that one of the solutions, do you think?
Yes, I think that definitely. I think the idea of purpose is beautiful, but I think it needs to be translated so that everybody in the organization and including wider stakeholders understand it, because it's big. It's like vision, it's big, isn't it? So it has to be translated. There are different ways how leaders can, you know, lead with purpose. It's often linked to values as well, how you actually operate, how you work. So it could be very much about a purpose that is linked to the way you treat your employees as well. So it's about that impact you have on your staff and how you want to treat them and how you might want to create a community. And that we know benefits also, you know, the outputs and the work we do as organizations. So purpose has different flavor, I think. So there are different structures for organizations also to show purpose. If you think about charities, of course, have strong purpose. They will define specific areas, groups for which they care and for which they are contributing in some way or another, whether it's through funds, you know, events, services they provide. So I think we get it probably more when we talk about charities. There are other entities like social enterprises as well that can be commercial organizations, but also have a purpose and they have a social cause that they will, you know, support as well. And I think about one that maybe you know is the company that, you know, they do, they bottle mineral water. They call Belu. They have this kind of blue brand. And so they're very interesting because they're a commercial organization, they're a social enterprise, but they basically, you know, give all their profits to charitable causes and to make sure that people around the world have access to clean water and better hygiene. So there's this element of purpose where you can still be a commercial entity and you basically give back to society. And this is also quite interesting because purpose, and we talk about sustainability, can be about environmental, you know, impact, but also social impact. And both are not incompatible and often should come hand to hand. And we've seen as well in America, there's this kind of accreditation you can get, which is the B Corp accreditation as well, which is exactly what you were saying, Neil. It's about the idea of leading with purpose and understanding whatever you do and how you operate your business, you will make sure that you do it with the considerations to your social and environmental impact. So it goes, you know, within, like, I think it works well when it's within the strategy, when it's actually really embedded at the top level. But it's also translated throughout the organization so that everybody individually understands their contribution and what, you know, working for an organization that has purpose means in the context of that organization. And I think that's where sometimes that translation somehow gets lost. which is a shame, but it is complicated because it means, you know, reassessing your processes, how you work with people. If you are producing goods, it could be around packaging. It's, you know, who you're working with. So it can be quite a big process and quite a lengthy one. So I attended recently a really good talk that was organized by NED on Board, so Non-Executive Directors on Board, their membership-based organization. And it was exactly that. It was about an organization that just decided, you know, got the B Corp accreditation. And it was about this exactly that, leading, you know, with purpose, and how they made it happen and how they kind of like contributed to this. And what were their plans to making sure that every employee would understand what that means? And it felt so beautiful to listen to this. It felt really empowering. And we talked about another example with a couple of attendees of Patagonia. So Patagonia is a big brand. And recently, the owner put a letter to the world and said that their only shareholder is the planet, which again is a beautiful concept of purpose. I think it translated very well. But Patagonia is an interesting organization because from its inception, it's been about being an organization that, you know, would work with the planet in mind and reducing its cost on the environment, its negative impact on the environment. To the extent, Neil, that I remember during a Black Friday, you know, this like flash sales, you know, day, Patagonia put a little ad saying, you do not need another jacket. They were trying to reduce the idea of like, you know, consumerism and thinking we need more, because again, it's about reducing the impact. So it managed to translate its purpose in everything it does, you know, from actually the way the company is set up, the people working there and their operations, to the communication that they have. And I think that's beautiful. It's not always easy done, especially when you're switching from a commercial, you know, organization that is listed on the stock market to, you know, becoming a purpose-led organization that is, you know, broadening the concept of impact to not just revenue and profits, but to a positive social and environmental impact. So that was a good story. And we want more Patagonia companies.
We certainly do. We certainly do. I mean, it was just an incredible moment that when you just thought, you know, anything is really possible. And there's a real feel good, isn't there, about this? And you almost can't talk about or think about brands like Patagonia and others are doing great work without smiling, without feeling good. It's that there's a commercial kind of part of your mind that thinks, okay, that's a really good savvy thing from a commercial perspective, but then you also think about from your heart, what does this actually mean? Oh wow, it's both things. It is joining the head and the heart together in this one sort of joined up strategy. And I think the one word I just really heard, and it keeps going around in my head since you said it, was it's complicated. And I think there's this kind of, I guess, assumption that, you know, finding your purpose, thinking about the future, becoming purpose and value driven has to be complicated because we've got people involved, we've got strategy involved, we've got lots of different perspectives, we've also got customers, we're busy. It's complicated. But actually, at the core of all of this is a beautiful simplicity. And so, you know, if you're Patagonia, it isn't complicated. It is so, so simple because they've figured it out. And for most of us, I guess, and we're on this, you know, maybe the first couple of steps of the journey, it looks in the future like it's going to be super complicated. So I guess I've got a question for you, because I know innovation is really true and dear to your heart in all the work that you do, is kind of where would somebody, a leader or somebody who wants to be the sponsor of, you know, the future in their organization, Where would they begin? I mean, is there research? Is there innovation? Are there kind of think tanks? Are there mastermind groups? Are there kind of, where's the first kind of starting point to kind of almost get a sense of what type of future we're after and where we can, you know, have a higher purpose that drives towards maybe something really specific so we can all understand it? I mean, where do you begin?
Well, it's a good question. And I was thinking about it myself. I think there are probably different routes And I think the power of social media and, you know, the positive noise that consumers make is a driver for change and innovation. And I think we are probably going to see more of that, you know, where, you know, groups of the population, maybe younger audiences, are going to say, we need more purpose. We need to have ethical companies. We need to see this. And we need it now. So there is definitely this pressure that I think is rising. I think in terms of where research and innovation comes from, I always go back to funding, because at the end of the day, you're always going to have to need some money, you know, to be able to make it work. And I used to work for many startups, and I love the idea of entrepreneurship, where you have to really absolutely believe in what you do and make it work. But, you know, as an entrepreneur, as a kind of working as a startup, you also have to look for funding. So you have to prove that your concept, your idea has a value. And the value is going to be commercial value with a return, so that, you know, people who are going to believe in you will get some kind of guarantee that they will see an impact. But also, this is where it's exciting, is that many startups are also thinking about a social impact and environmental impact. So different ways how to measure. So I always think about, where does the money come from? And this is quite interesting, because public funding is a big part. So, you know, governments around the world, so our money, you know, in a way, our taxes contribute to that. You know, it's public funding that funds research, which takes place in universities, in other organizations. And this is the major, you know, part for funding of innovation and research. But you also have philanthropists. So we will be familiar with the Bill Gates of this world. And you have big foundations like the Wellcome Trust. So you also have philanthropist organizations that have set up funds to support research innovation. And they're the main two areas, basically. And then they filter throughout, you know, the whole economy and different areas. And of course, you have commercial organizations that will reinvest and use some of their profits to, you know, boost innovation. So I think it's quite interesting to understand, you know, what are the criteria to be able to get the funding? And I work a lot with researchers and people in innovation, who I think are super excited and have amazing ideas, but sometimes there's a little disconnect between actually what they want to do and how it's linking with some, you know, bigger goals. So funders, whoever they are, will have some strategic themes, some areas that they might want, you know, to support. And I was looking at Innovate UK, which is now called UK Research Innovation. Some of the key themes are around the future economy. So it would be about tackling the adverse environmental impacts we've seen. It's about boosting health and well-being for the population. It's about creating and benefiting from advance in technology and how it's applied, you know, throughout the organization, or throughout the you know, the society. So it has specific themes, and I think my advice is to be very clear, or as close as possible, to understand where you will get, you know, the funding, or how can you apply to certain sources, and understand what people are looking for and linking it. And what is happening, Neil, the trend tends to be about encouraging collaboration. So, you know, governments need to encourage innovation to help us solve challenges that often are global challenges, but also more national challenges or local challenges. So it has to come from society, and to encourage people, you know, there are certain criteria in terms of themes that want to be covered, but there's also this impetus to think about wider collaboration. And I think about collaboration as the wisdom of crowds. It's actually encouraging people who do not necessarily work in the same field to connect together. So for instance, in academia, where you have funding criteria here, tends to be a lot about multidisciplinary projects, larger projects, international projects, and linking, connecting minds that may have never worked together in other ways to solve problems. And some of this can actually lead to amazing, you know, products and solutions that help us all. Others is about sharing knowledge that will help and contribute to maybe entrepreneurs setting up a startup and you have spin-offs, for instance. And for others, it's about, you know, helping, you know, understanding, for instance, environmental impact or social impacts and helping us understanding the situation before we can create solutions. So it can be quite broad, but I always think about, you know, how will you be sure to have the right resources if you have this idea? And if you work in a commercial organization, it's again about, you know, putting a plan together and saying, convincing the decision makers that actually this is a good idea. And it might be improving a process that reduce environmental costs in your operating procedures. It could be lots of different things. But again, it's about understanding how you will benefit, you know, from it, how the organization might benefit from it, and how you'll be able to measure it is quite critical. So, you know, that impetus about trying to find the sources of funding, I think, is quite critical, and linking the passion and skill set and knowledge and expertise to those sources of funding sometimes can be a bit tricky, but they're the way forward to make sure there is the ability for people to do what they want to do, you know, is really important.
So I'm going to recommend to everybody listening or watching this right now to just press pause button and to go back 3 minutes and listen to what Natasha has just said. For me, that was a moment, a huge moment. What I've taken away, and let me just summarize what I think I've heard you say here, Natasha, is that no matter what kind of organization you are, if you can behave like a startup, if you can figure out the problem that you're trying to solve that means something to people or planet, and you can demonstrate or prove the value that your group of people can bring to solve those challenges, you can get funding, but you can also then uncover and discover your purpose. I think that's what you said. Behave like a startup.
That sounds good.
Basically.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That to me, honestly, thank you so much. There's the little snippet that's going to make the promotional piece for this episode. Honestly, it's so succinct, but so clear to me now, the mindset that I think all of us, no matter whether we're big, small, medium, and whatever sector we're in, there's the mindset that can be the game changer. Because I think so many people have struggled with, yes, but we need to serve our existing customers, and they're all a bit crazy since, you know, all the lockdowns and stuff, and we're not really sure which way we're pointing, and nobody's got any money because of the economy and this, that, and the other. They're missing the point here, is that they've got capabilities and hopefully some core competencies that just make them better than everybody else. If they can behave with a mindset as though they're a startup, so go really back to basics and say, what is it that we are really adding value with? Maybe we can uncover our purpose from that. And then maybe people will start to get really interested in us. And then the funding comes, and then the fun starts to happen. Wow. That's a real wow moment, because that is different. That's a different kind of mindset, I think, to the way most people are thinking today.
And I love what you just said. I think to me, it's about this entrepreneurial mindset that I talk about, you know, and that entrepreneurial mindset doesn't have to be for you to be an entrepreneur and to have your own company. I think you're right. And I think we're focusing a lot on skills. And I was looking at the World Economic Forum has come up with a report that's been interesting about, you know, upskilling and reskilling in view of the changes we face, which is really fascinating. And skills are fantastic, and we do need to learn more, that's for sure. But I think I love the word that you talk about, which is mindset, and I love the word you talk about, mindful, as well. I think there's a lot about that. It's about really an approach, a perspective, an attitude that I think to me is positive, looking towards the future, but very pragmatic as well, and thinking about what you can do now to drive this positive future. And I think that is linked to what I would hope we would do more of, which is, you know, being wiser, having this element of wisdom. And that wisdom is shared. That goes back to that collaboration I was mentioning. You know, it's not about also thinking you do everything on your own and alone. On the contrary, it's about who else can you engage with to lead that purpose, to lead that change, you know, is really important. And I'm pretty sure many board members and senior leadership teams are also wondering what to do next. You know, it is not something that we just feel maybe at certain level of organizations or sectors. I think all of us are probably feeling that. What do we do next in this world? We're not quite sure. So your idea, your sense of a better impact that you can create, I think is as good as anyone. It's the question to me, it's about how do you word it and how do you actually talk to people so they actually understand and they relate to it. So there's definitely a communication piece in there that we sometimes forget because we're so passionate and we feel, I can see it, but we have to convince others. We have to translate it in a way that others can understand and relate to it and feel like they are willing to help and support. And this is really important.
I'm working with a business at the moment who are kind of, I would describe as kind of locked into their past. So they're a very successful business. They know there's something else outside of the way that they currently do business. They are literally not on this journey to sustainability at all. They're kind of almost limiting themselves by their mindset. So they have a very, very strong strategy. They know exactly where they're going. They've got, you know, market leading products. Their people are great, but I would say possibly a little misguided at times because there is an assumption our market is always going to be like this and that our products and services are always going to be required. Whereas, I mean, you and I know that every product and every brand that has ever existed since the start of time is on a life cycle. Yes. They don't understand that and they think that we'll always be here and there'll always be a need for us and we'll always have customers. And what I'd love to do is to help them kind of see that there's an opportunity to pivot. I'm going to bring this word into the conversation now, this word pivot, because if, and I'm sure you've seen this with innovation, because it opens up so many opportunities. And if a business sees that there is an opportunity to pivot, in other words, kind of turn the whole ship from pointing forwards to pointing maybe 90 degrees sideways or, you know, at a different direction or into a different sector based on the skills and expertise they have within the organization. But it might be a whole new marketplace. It might require a whole new set of products or services, but they're able to do it and that would potentially be their purpose and the value they could bring in the future. But that surely must be one of the hardest things to kind of gain the confidence, because you talk about, you know, communicating throughout the organization. Even if one or two people understand that, to actually pivot as a business is really, really hard, isn't it?
It is extremely hard. And I think many organizations will have to do that. Especially in the energy field, if you're working with fossil fuels, you know, for instance, we know that the big giant, you know, organizations have to reinvent themselves. I've seen that recently as well, talking about the pressure coming from customers at times where there is quite strong movement of lobbying against, luxury brands in this day and age where there's a feeling that they're not adapting their business models in view of the challenges that many people are facing and also the environmental impact they may have. So that pressure is coming, you know, from external factors. And I think that it's all about the driver for change, isn't it? It has to be, okay, what is it that it's forcing us or encouraging us to change? So there's an element about having an analysis about what are the forces for and against. And of course, there's an element of fear and the change that goes with it. But I think that if it comes from a good place where there's a really strong, you know, purpose behind it, and it's about sustainability, and that the team, the staff, and the main stakeholders understand the importance of switching, moving marketplace potentially, I think it has more chances for it to be successful. What I would say is that with everything that is going on and also having to drive change in an organization, that the support that staff need is really quite critical. And I think that we need to help people to manage this transition. So I talk about the transition points. You know, I'm not the only one. A lot of people are writing about it, but there is a transition point. Some people talk about tipping points, but there are transition both in, as you say, the organization's life cycle or their product life cycle, and there are tipping points as well, or transition points in our own roles and careers and what we need to do. So referring back to the World Economic Forum, there was this really interesting element about the idea that 50% of the workforce will need to be reskilled by 2030. You know, I didn't look at the source and how they did the research, but that looks crazy just because of advancing technology, different ways how to work, different roles that are created. You know, even if you think about, you know, students right now, apprentices, you know, people who are getting qualifications right now, if for them to think about what they might do next and their career over the next 30, 40, 50 years, it's impossible to know, because there are going to be such changes in roles and in the types of organizations and what will be available for them. So I think that it goes back to what we're mentioning, you know, the communication is important, but also managing those transitions and helping people. So the learning, the reskilling, the supporting, the structure have to be adapted as well. I think a lot of the challenges we face with, to me, seems to be systemic. So it's about old systems, and it's about trying to think about new systems, new ways of working. And with the hybrid working or working from home, I don't know if you've seen, Neil, but it's kind of like, it kind of goes back now and thinking that there are some really high costs from the social interactions on not being together in one place often enough. So you have these ad hoc conversations, you have this ways to connect with team members, with other colleagues, you know, that helps you each other, that helps you understand that, you know, actually maybe I just need to have a coffee and then talk about this particular issue rather than sending another email. Maybe I need to be a little more compassionate to understand what's going on and why this is not happening. So that is really about, you know, helping each other change when it's been communicated well enough and it's understood why it's happening. I think a lack of communication tends to kind of stop people, and we all do. I'm guilty of anyone where we are. So if we are fearful and we don't understand the impact the change might have, often we don't necessarily want to do anything about it. We try to kind of like stop it happening. So that resistance can be difficult to manage initially. But when people understand, you know, why the change needs to happen, why that transition to a more sustainable or more purpose-led, you know, organization is needed, if they're well supported and if there are, you know, structures and systems in place that are encouraging people to work collaboratively, I really think that it's the chance for us to work differently and to do that well. And as you talk about it, to be mindful as well, you know, mindful of how we can build better community in organizations, but also broader communities, you know, potentially locally as well, for our well-being and for our, I would say, survival, you know, pretty much.
Yeah, I think I just love the way that you've introduced this whole kind of change agent, as you called them earlier in the conversation, that this is a really key component of kind of leadership going forward and communication going forward. I guess if you're, as an individual, if you're kind of really happy with change and you embrace change, and in fact, change is an energizer, I think for me, it's just in my DNA. I absolutely love new technology. I love change. I love kind of watching that process. I love being part of it. I love facilitating change. And I think it's inherent in who I am as a person. But I totally understand that for a lot of people, that is the biggest fear of anything. It's because of the unpredictable nature of it. You don't really know within that change what it's going to be like next. And for me, it's lovely. That uncertainty, that unknown is exciting, and it's a real fuel. But if you're not of that way in mind, maybe this is where the barriers to sustainable kind of development and futurology and innovation stuff come from. It is that section of the population who really, and again, this is in no way critical, but really struggle with change, because for a lot of people, it is the worst thing. They love the predictability of a stable economy, a stable workplace, you know, a job for life, as we used to call it, you know, back in the day, which of course, as we know, is no such thing now. But people still seem to be kind of almost craving that predictability of, you know, stable environments and stable world, really, which of course is now long gone. You know, nothing is predictable anymore, and you know, change is a constant. Do you feel that leadership, and we've coming back sort of almost full circle to this whole thing about trying to understand what sustainability means to us as individuals and organizations, do you feel that the role of leadership then going forward is to be change facilitators, is to kind of really help and encourage people through the change? So it's less about the leading and it's more about the empowering and building confidence and reducing the fear. Do you think that is the definition of leaders in the future?
Absolutely. It has to be a big part of it. It's about sensing, listening, understanding others. So a lot of it contributes to emotional intelligence, you know, and it's a lot less about knowing what to do every day. It's a lot about dealing with the what we call the gray area, you know, the uncertainty, and navigating. I always feel like this analogy of being on a boat as well, you know, it's like you have different weather, you know, different climate, different weather, and you have to deal with this, and yet have everybody on board. So I feel like this analogy works quite well in the world in which we operate. It may change. We may get a little bit of a calm sea at some stage. I don't see it really right now, but I think you're right. The definition of a leader, the type of skills, the type of mindset, and I talk about the wisdom that is required, is very different to what other leaders have been doing up to now. And I think in a way it's encouraging, because it means we can have more diverse leaders, you know, people who maybe in the past would have not necessarily been interested in leading are now considering it. And that's what I'm hoping we can do, is encourage people to lead the way, you know, for good, to lead and help and contribute to this future that we are creating together. I mean, I get excited about innovation, because I think we need to show what the impact means. What is it for our daily lives, you know, as well? So I get excited about, you know, technology innovation in healthcare, for instance, and how I was looking at virtual realities helping new doctors, you know, practice operations, and that's improved their skills compared to traditional, you know, training methods. I get excited about, you know, the health trackers. I don't know if you have that, Neil, when you do exercise, when you get back to exercise, you know, you can have all these wearables and sensors, and they can be used to help you as well with your well-being, or it can be used for, you know, knowing exactly how much of a particular medication you need, and you can do that at distance. So there are so many things in terms of innovation that is applied innovation that I think can help us embrace change and embrace, you know, the new environment in which we are working. Because maybe one of the positive, and I think we should end on a positive, is despite having all these difficult external conditions, when you look at the pandemic and you look how quickly the vaccine was designed and was actually you know, manufactured and distributed around the world, that is an incredible achievement that no one would have said would be possible before the pandemic. So sometimes external factors drive change and drive positive change. Now, the hope is that we will go towards what we call, you know, responsible research, responsible innovation. So we have a clear understanding of actually the impact this innovation has, and we are working towards, you know, more of a positive impact on all aspects we've discussed, and not just about maybe a commercial gain, which is a short-term gain. I think that's where we can embed the whole thing together. So there's a lot of discussion about how the green economy can also, or the green revolution can boost the economy. Again, how the role of technology can boost the economy. and how this can contribute to broader impact as well. So I think there's a lot of positive noise and very positive discoveries and innovation out there. But it's a question of like making sure this is well communicated to empower. And I love the word you were talking about, empowering others, to empower others and to empower people in all walks of life, in all roles in organizations, to suggest, you know, better products, better ways to do things, better impact. And I think to me, that's what is exciting, is that we don't have to just sit and think we're waiting for a handful of people to tell us what to do next. We can maybe have a bit more of a say in that. We should have more of a say in that. So I'm feeling quite inspired, but I agree with you. It's not always easy on a daily basis, but we do our best. One day at a time.
One day at a time. Yeah. Be like a startup. It's resonating in my head. I'm just saying, this is going to be a mantra I'm going to be telling people from here onwards, I know. So thank you so much for that, Natasha. I mean, it's just been so fascinating just hearing, you know, a very, very clear, but very different perspective on how to, you know, cope, define and work with this word sustainability, because it has so many different meanings to so many different people. But if you can be like a startup, if you can embrace change, if you can be open and authentic and just communicate, and as Natasha recommends, you know, collaborate, the innovation will come through. You know, that higher purpose, if you need to pivot, you need to pivot. You know, that's just the commercial reality right here, right now. You know, the old stable days are long gone, but let's embrace this. And I think, I think certainly Natasha is one of the evangelists in this area. So how do people, if they want to contact you, Natasha, because I'm sure you will have whetted the appetite of quite a few people to find out more on how to do this. How do people contact you if they want to connect?
So thank you so much, Neil. So they can connect on LinkedIn with me at Natasha Wilson, or my website is called cambridgeinsights.co.uk, and I'll be really happy to have conversations or help in any way I can. So thank you so much, Neil. It's been really great to talk to you, and I absolutely love this topic. It's very close to my heart. And I think that, you know, we can create this greater world or more sustainable world. I think I really believe that we can do that. So let's see and make it happen.
Absolutely, 100%. Thank you again, Natasha.
Thank you, Neil.